ongoing dialogue of the God Journey podcast. Many of us are waking up to God's not a formula to be worked. He's a God who loves us, who has a purpose in the world to redeem it back to himself, who will work good in our lives through the most horrible things that we face.
When we first started this whole podcast thing, you and I were trying to come up with a name. I just remember somehow the whole God Journey thing settled.
And we've had people tell us that was a stupid name.
Those just few words say an awful lot of true things. This is my journey. This is just my deal, my little story. It's not about me. I am just a supporting actor in a greater drama that isn't about me.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And we're coming to you from the wind tunnel that is Southern California.
Oh, my gosh. It's like blowing your palm tree just clear to the ground there, buddy.
Since Sarah and I have been up here, I mean, we live up in this little hill where it's the end of a canyon. And when the winds blow in Southern Cal, they blow bad here. So I got me a little wind meter out there so I can see how bad the winds were.
Your thing is like twirling all over the place.
I got to tell you, 3 weeks ago when they had the big fire here and they had big Santa Ana winds blowing through here,
yep,
the winds broke my wind gauge. They blew it, broke the whole plastic mount, shattered it, and fell over.
Oh, marvelous.
And that last registered wind was speed was 47.4, and it broke it. So I called the company saying, what, wind speed didn't go over 50 miles an hour? So they sent me a new one, and now I've got it rigged up there.
All
never
right.
Go
yeah, there you go. But it's been Mach 2 right now.
So if you hear wind in the background, that's what that is. If you hear screaming in the background, we're not hurting each other. That's my granddaughter who's
She's having one of them fits, huh?
She's just
she's
not
going
about
for
to
it.
Take a nap.
She is She's experiencing her will, and she's expressing it. And I say, go, girl. You go.
Yeah, my daughter's not going to be your favorite
you go,
buddy
girl.
Today. My daughter's here getting some work done for us. And because of that, Amy's supposed to take a nap, but just Amy's not taking a nap.
There we go.
So hopefully you won't hear all that blood-curdling screaming. And if you do hear it, you'll just know we're not abusing anybody here because it's just a little nappy time we're having trouble with.
All right. There's something pretty fantastic about kids, aren't there, huh?
I always loved it when kids scream when they were trying. I always told Sarah when our kids were little and they were screaming about bedtime or, you know, making a big, throwing a big fuss. We always looked at each other and said, they will sleep longer. This is wearing them out. And when they finally give up and give in, they'll sleep a long, long time.
I have given myself on occasion to throwing myself down on the floor and screaming along with them until they look at me like, what are you doing, Dad? And it works very wonderful because they think I'm pretty stupid when I do it. And I say, well, I'm just doing what you're doing.
Does it work more than once?
I've only had to do it a couple of times, but it always produces wonderful laughter, so it's fun.
Okay, then they're kind of cool after that.
Yeah, they kind of go, Dad, you know, you shouldn't do that. And they somehow think it's fine for them to continue, but, you know, it's funny.
Okay. I don't think we're going to do that and try it with Amy since...
No, we're in here podcasting.
I was alone, I might try it, but Julie's here, so... We'll let her have this one. I didn't think she was there a minute ago because we heard this blood-curdling scream. Turned out Julie was actually in the room. So. Amy's trying to just say, I want it my way today. And ever felt like that spiritually?
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't seem to get anywhere with God regardless of how I scream.
Oh, man, I remember one day in college, I major disappointment. It felt like God had really betrayed me. Now I think about the language, and it just seems so absurd. But at the time, it was very real. I remember going out, and I was going to go out, because I really...
You're going to tell them what you thought.
Get out of the dorm, go out on this hill, get all alone. I walked out of the dorm, and it was a driving rainstorm. It was just pounding. Lightning and thunder like it can do in the middle. You know what? I went anyway.
There you go. Oh, you had a tood.
I went up
you
there
had a tood.
On a hill in the lightning storm.
There we go.
And I gave him the business.
And I'm going to do business with God. You strike me, I'll get you.
And I'm alive to talk about it. That's the amazing thing.
Talk about the long-suffering patience of Jesus, huh?
But I was so disappointed and so angry and felt like, I mean, I'd been betrayed, definitely. I mean, a lie had been perpetrated about me by some people that had cost me something I wanted very deeply. And you know what? I went out there and railed until I just didn't have any railing left. I just can't even imagine me doing that today. Maybe something will happen someday that will put me back in that place. But I kind of just much more at peace with God's ability. Because what happened 4 months later, because I didn't get that thing I wanted, God brought something else into my life that was far more meaningful. And if I'd gotten the one, I wouldn't have had the other offered to me. And it was some job stuff on campus in my college years. And the other stuff I ended up doing was far more fruitful and far more fruitful spiritually, for one. And then two, it was far ended up being far more fruitful financially, which it didn't look like it was going to be starting out. So I tell you what, there's been enough of that as I've grown on over the years, and now I'm, 53. And I finally get the idea when something really, really disappoints me, that God just has something better going on. I just don't see it yet. And so I'm less likely to run out on a hillside and scream and fit with him. But I've done it.
Well, what do you say to someone who, okay, they don't have the life history built up. They have a whole bunch of disappointments, but they can't somehow view it and see it where they have the through line of, well, I really think I was trading up. I trusted God, and it was what was behind door number two was better. I mean, what if someone says, dude, I got hosed.
door number two was really bad. It
looks like I lost it all. What happens with them? Because, I too can share stories.
Right.
But I just know. I know folks that, when they're in the midst of it and they're wanting to go up on the hill, what we're saying right now doesn't come as sweet melodies.
No, it doesn't. And I would say if you need to go up on that hill and scream, go ahead. God can handle it. God, really.
He's big enough.
He doesn't hit people with lightning for being honest and real with him. Even when that honesty and real is just, I'm sure he looks down like we're thinking about kind of laughing about
Amy. Yeah, Amy's having a fit. And he's like, there's nothing wrong. Your pamper's clean. You've been fed.
You're good.
Life is fine. All you got to do is take a nap. And we're all just waiting around hoping you'll scream so loud you pass out.
But we feel bad for her.
Yeah.
I'm sure God goes, oh, man, I wish you weren't here. If you're there, be there. And I wouldn't say everything in my life that didn't turn out the way I wanted turned out better. But I would say on the whole of it, I wouldn't trade where I'm living right now for anything I wanted back then. And you can read into that 20 years of crashing my head against a brick wall that didn't produce what I thought. This is not just like, yeah, well, I learned this on Thursday and Friday I was better again. This is 20 years of gutting it out. And if you haven't had the 20 years, what are you going to say? Get started. No time like the present.
Drink regularly along the road, and that's water, please. Not
well. Some of the saddest letters I get sometimes are people. I heard from a guy that was reading. He loves me in his 90s, and it opened his eyes, and he was just saying, oh, "Why didn't I get this earlier?" And that's a great question. I don't know how to. I mean, just
well, at least you got it now.
Yeah, at least you do. And so it's got to happen somewhere. But I think it's worth doing. I got a great letter yesterday, a couple days ago, actually. And I posted a picture on my blog that came with it. This couple that Sarah and I met when we were in New Zealand a few years ago. And we didn't get much time with them. We were in their home very briefly, in and out, kind of quick, and didn't get a chance to know them real well. But the last couple of months, they've been writing me a bit, sharing some of the things that God's done in their life through the transition series off the Livestream site and off of He Loves Me and the Jake book. And they've been ordering stuff and really had a ball with some of this stuff. Well, they were coming up on Christmas, and their two kids, they only got two kids left at home. I think three kids married and gone, have their own families. And only one of those kids could come back for Christmas. The ones that were still living in the home were going off on mission trips. So normally this is a big family spread on Christmas Day, and they're down to five people. And she was kind of lamenting that, God, gee, what a bummer. And God just nudged her to say, go ahead and have a big dinner. Just go ahead, cook all the stuff, and then go find people who look like they need a place to eat on Christmas.
Oh, there you go.
That's what they felt nudged to do.
There you go.
So they did. They got all the trimmings, the five people that were coming said, yeah, this will be fun. And then Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, they were every place they would go. And there was this little village out in the South Island of New Zealand. They were looking for folks. It looked like, and they saw this one bearded guy go past them in a camper van thing. And I guess they thought, oh, my gosh, he looks scary. He looks like he could have tattoos and guns and
oh, no.
All kinds of stuff. But they thought, why not? So the two gals in the car. And they turn and they follow this camper van. The camper van pulls off the road. They pull off behind it. And all of a sudden, the camper van shoots off. And they went.
Yeah, he's thinking they're chasing him.
Yeah, I don't know. So they didn't. But
they didn't get camper man.
Christmas morning, they went back to this campsite thing in the area to see it's summer in New Zealand during Christmas time. And so they were going to this campsite, and there was that camper again. And it was a lady sitting in front of it. So they went over and started talking to her, and the husband comes around the corner, and they got time to say, we didn't want to do small. We wanted to do big Christmas. And if you want to come to dinner, you're welcome. Turns out they're missionaries from Australia working with the Aboriginal groups in New Zealand. They said, yeah, we'd love to come. So they came over for dinner, and they invited some down-and-out drug abuse gal that's kind of a social outcast. They invited her. She came. Found some bikers there that are Germans who actually are living in Malaysia They came over for dinner. They just had a...
Talk about a party.
And they just said, boy, we had the best time, and we didn't try to share Jesus with everybody, but Jesus came up because, like, you know, what are you doing, and what's going on, and had a great day, just a fun, fun day. And they sent me this picture of a dad laying on the grass with two kids playing, climbing all over him. And at the top, I used one of the taglines from Livestream, Living Loved. And I just thought, man, that is just... I tell you, that whole childlikeness, which follows up on some experiences we had with Amy over Christmas time playing in the snow, and just the wonder of that little girl watching her embrace life, learn new words, see new things. It's really taking me back to that whole spirit of childlikeness that Jesus says we get to experience with him.
Yeah, and unless we become like little children, we're really not going to enter into what he was talking about.
He said that, didn't he?
He said that.
Over and over again.
A couple of times. Well, you know what's bizarre? As I was just checking the forum as we're going live here, and I think God's saying
something.
It's
really live for us.
It's live for us, but check this out. This very moment, someone just posted, becoming as a little children. He said, I just felt impressed lately, the need to become like little children. So I think we got a little thread going on.
Who's this?
I think it's the Thompsons. They're from England. So
wow.
I don't know how time delay works, but Colin, way to go.
That's Colin.
Colin Thompson.
Okay, yeah. I should change my email with that brother.
He has in quotes, nobody important. I'm going like, oh, come on now. Every kid's important. There's only two times that Jesus got really ticked off.
Two times. The temple was definitely one of those.
Money changers and the merchandising religion. He's going like, I'm not for that.
Yeah.
And you get in trouble for that. He'll whip you for that.
Yeah.
And then the other time is when they were dissing the kids. And they thought they were doing something more important than that little kid there. And Jesus, he just got angry. And he said, unless you become like a little child, you're not going to enter in. And you just go like, wait a minute, there's something here.
That still happens a lot today. I notice when I travel around, I'm staying in homes or hanging out with groups in more informal settings. And I usually like engaging the kids and talking to them and enjoying whatever kids seem to be around. I mean, I just enjoy kids. And I'll start talking to kids, and often parents and others will jump in. Okay, now you kids, go in the other room and play. Wayne's busy.
Yeah, they're always trying to push the kids out.
Hey, what are you doing? This is the best part of the whole deal, is playing with the kids.
Well, you know, this is revolutionary for my brain, all right? I never thought about this before, but why in the world did God come as a little baby and spend all those years growing up? I mean, we don't have much of the record of what he was doing until he's like 30, okay?
A little bit of 12, but not much.
A little bit, just a little minor reference. But it's like all those years,
yeah.
God, very God. Spending his time being a kid.
Yep.
And it's just striking me like, that's pretty wild that he spent all that time just being a kid,
He spent 90% of his physical life on the planet growing up.
As a youngster.
Yeah.
And it's like, hello. You know, nobody ever made a message about that, but I'm just going like, you know what? That kind of rocks. That's a little physical picture of what we might be stumbling over and missing.
I've been reading the whole Nicodemus story. I've been getting really turned on to what Jesus was talking about. Remember, Nicodemus is a Pharisee. He's got the real religious thing going. But he's a seeker. He's hungry. He's seeking Jesus out at a nighttime kind of encounter. And he's saying, how can I be part of this? And Jesus says, you've got to be born again. Now, that's the only time in Scripture the phrase born again is used. And Jesus didn't use it. I mean, like we use it now among evangelicals.
Are you born again?
Yeah, people say, are you Christian? Yeah, I'm a Christian. Are you born again Christian? And that means like, are you real? Not one of those pretend Christians.
Yeah.
You don't. And I know a lot of really wonderful believers who find the term born again offensive because it's been so divisive. But Jesus is not using it here to define the real, true, evangelical, serious believers from the mainline liberal, good-for-nothing believer. Yeah, he's not even doing that here. What he's doing is saying to a fairly very religious guy, let's not say fairly religious, very religious guy, listen, if you don't wipe it out and start all over, you're going to miss it. And I just, man, I tell you what.
That's pretty tough.
That is tough. If you're that guy.
He's going like, how do I get back in my mama's womb?
Yeah.
And you're going like, not the point here.
He totally misses the point because he's thinking with his head. But I think the advice is compelling. You got to start over sometimes. You get so much religious expectation built up, so much stuff you've had from the past and trying to make it work, and it's not working, and you get frustrated, and you start judging whether it's working for other people or not because it's not working for you. And I wonder if this isn't just great advice for some people. I tell you, there have been many occasions in my life where I've had to start all over. okay, I'm lost. I have no idea how this is working. I'm start all over. And listen to him and let him rebuild his life in me. And I, ultimately what he's saying to Nicodemus is not about salvation. It's not to get saved, quote unquote. It's to have sight into this kingdom, into this relationship that God's offering him. And he, from where he is on all the religious soapboxes he's standing on, he can't see it from there. And so Jesus said, being born again, you got to start all over. You got to trash all of that because you don't know. Some of it's not all bad. I like the language Jesus used about sometimes you mix the old with the new and there's some value in that. But I think what he's saying, Nicodemus, is you're so lost in it, you can't decide what's good and what's not good.
Wow.
You got to start all over.
That kind of turns it on its ear.
Yeah, and I love, and that to me, that's the childlikeness of, I watch Amy now learning new words, and now the big thing is she's putting words into, not quite sentences yet, but at least phrases, you know, it's, pa, get mail, or pa, you know, it's fun. It's fun to watch her discover, to think a year ago, we couldn't even talk to this child. I mean, just, she couldn't understand anything going on, and she'd talk in great gibberish, and we'd all pretend it meant something, but. You know, I think our spiritual journey is like that. Somehow we want to go from, I don't know anything about God, to I know everything about her. I know a lot. I've got this whole relationship figured out. When I think it's pretty much like watching Amy grow up, which reminds me of my own kids growing up. Watching that happen again, that process of discovery and of wonder and of not having to have it all figured out. And I love that stuff.
Well, I mean, and it's true some places on the planet where, you know, there's horrible poverty and kids are on their own. But there's not too many places where kids are on the corner holding a sign, we'll work for food. Most of us are growing up in an environment where, you know what, the bulk of when you're a kid, you're being provided for. And you're not stressing. As you wake up, oh, what am I going to do for work today?
It's not true all over the world, unfortunately.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah.
But I think there's something in the context in which it was said. I don't think it's, I mean, there was certainly poverty and difficulty in the times in which Jesus was growing up.
Right.
And when he's standing there saying these very things, he's talking to something that is common to most all folks. And they're growing up in families. And when you're little, you know what? If you leave the baby alone by itself, it cannot do for itself. It cannot feed itself. It can't even born itself. You know?
True.
Can't save itself. And so you look at that, it's like this whole spiritual life, I think he's speaking to the dynamic that, you know what? You can't do it for yourself. You can receive it. It's interesting in Luke, Matthew says, unless you become like a little child. Luke says, unless you receive the kingdom like a little child. And you're talking about there, I thought there was a wonderful little thing. He's saying, you know, this is about receiving. And so much of religion is telling me I got to be doing. And it's like Luke kind of says in a different passage, he says, you know, it's the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. And the idea there, I mean, I remember when I studied it, it was kind of like the idea of placing a coin in a little kid's hand and wrapping it around. It's like pressing it in there. It's like that's his desire. And you're just going like, gosh, that is not my natural sense of how I relate to God. I think there is something of really important footing as you try to like walk this relationship out. I think when all of a sudden you get too serious and you're getting too all adult and grown up and too responsible kind of dynamic, I think sometimes we make this too hard.
We do, and particularly that kind of expertish kind of feel. When you move from being somebody who's learning and discovering something
yep.
that's undefinable and bigger than you, to someone who thinks you've got it all figured out. We had a little brouhaha on the forum over the weekend from, you know, some folks sometimes come onto these email boards and forums and things. And instead of becoming part of a discussion, learning to grow, they've got an agenda. They've got something everybody else on that board, and their own expression of it was, I couldn't let some things go by unchallenged.
Ah, there you go. Thank you.
Which is not the language of somebody walking alongside somebody else. It's the language
of collision.
Of a cop. Kind of looking down the street going, yep, got to fix that problem. Yep, that person's out of order. Yep. And it absolutely destroys community. And I, you know, with 400 people on our forum, I always wonder, how long are we going to away with this before people come on with agendas, people come on with, and every email list I've been on, you've got these types that really feel like they've got to change the world to think the way they think. And they're right. And to me, that's just the whole opposite of what we're talking about being a child. And the whole idea of I've got to be an expert on anything, it's just, even as long as I've been in this thing, I don't feel like I'm an expert on it at all. I'm going to do this podcast because Brad and I are the answer people.
Yeah, we're the Bible answer people. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
We've got the intimacy with God and relational community all figured out, and we're going to tell you how to do it. But we're brothers who are discovering some things that we're excited about sharing, and I love hearing from other people who are discovering similar things. Had lunch with some folks today that listened to the podcast and happened to be camping less than a mile from my house and found out yesterday, hey, let's get together for lunch. So I met them for lunch. We had a great time, down a wonderful little journey, and doing some wonderful, crazy things together, and at a place in my life they can do that. And it was just fun to be kids together and not, okay, well, one of us is the expert, and the rest of us got to learn from. That's such a false deal.
You know what goes on in the world of little kids? I mean, I got three little ones,
yep.
And they're all at little different stages. Their primary occupation that they spend all their time, they're looking for someone to play with.
Playing or wanting to play?
They're playing or wanting to play. It's one of the two. It's like either, and I look at that and it's like, gosh, that is so opposite of how so many people, you know, I'm going to be spiritual. It's like, why did that become a serious thing?
Yeah, but when your kids get 15, 16, you got to work. You can't just play all the time. You got to work for a living. Don't we ruin that for kids eventually?
I think we do.
You're young. But how do you avoid it? My kids would still be playing in my house if I didn't play. You will get a job this summer. Stop being a freeloader.
What's really cool is Taylor has decided that she's going to marry one of her brothers. She's not sure which, but she's going to marry one of her brothers.
No wonder you talk like you're from the South sometimes.
You just stepped in it, buddy. You're in trouble now. Send those cards and letters to Wayne. But the reality is, she wants to marry one of her brothers, and Jonathan wants to live with us. And you know what's fun? I mean, as little kids, they're just saying, I like our family. I could go here, there, and wherever, but I don't want to leave. I like this relationship. I love that. And are we at pains to foster that? Yeah, it takes a lot of work, a lot of energy. You know, it's like we're going to help them learn to become best friends. They don't have a choice, all right? And the dynamic is...
They will when they get older.
They do. I know that.
That's the deal. But this child likeness, I mean, I like it from a spiritual standpoint. I wonder if from a practical standpoint of raising kids, somewhere you've got to, you know, as Paul said, put away childish things and, you know, become a man or a woman.
Yeah.
So... how does that play into what we're talking about spiritually? Because we know it happens practically. You're not going to have your kids at 27 still living in your house eating your food.
Nope, we'll be having a problem if they're still there.
We're going to ruffle that.
Excuse me, young boys. Time for you to leave.
I kept telling them, 18, you guys are out of here. People are going, you did. Absolutely. No, I wasn't going to make them go, and they've come back and lived with me since.
But you were preparing them.
I was. Be responsible. Do what you need to do to survive. Get a job. Get a career. Get a... But I'm not sure I'd do it the same.
No, well, you know what? I mean, probably if my life hadn't been significantly altered over the last 5 years, I might not be as in tune. I probably would have given them good old Puritan work ethic and get out there, be responsible, do your... And what's different is little old driven daddy has been turned upside on his head, and they're watching me. They see daddy's day sometimes doesn't go like daddy planned it, and it goes totally sideways. And as opposed to daddy chucking a fit, he responds to try to figure out, okay, where's God in this? Is God in this? Or did it just go sideways? And you know, sometimes I haven't a clue, but they're seeing a responsiveness in me that I'm looking to follow somebody. I'm not standing like, all right, boys, I have it all figured out. They're seeing me with Kelly struggle to figure it out, but with the sense that, you know what, the weight of everything isn't on us. It isn't crushing us. They're seeing us in the moments of indecision and the uncertainty, relaxing with that sense that I can trust someone will provide for me. And that someone is my Father. It's Jesus.
And so there can be a playfulness in our heart, even... when you're in crisis,
Yeah, absolutely.
In fact, that's probably
the
time
we need
it the most.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I am good at laughing, and I am good at making tense moments in the family. I find the humor in all of it, and so I'm the jokester. I'm the guy that pulls the little funny button and allows sort of the whole tension to kind of drain out. Not always, and if I fail to do it, then we are in trouble, because then I'm usually the guy who's got the problem. But what's so valuable about that is I think little kids don't take everything too seriously. They do seem to have the capacity to laugh, and they have a resilience that, you know, there's a moment of seriousness, there may be a moment of discipline, but 5 minutes later, they're not still stuck there. Occasionally they might be, but often, as soon as they find the next thing to play with, man, there's life again. They can quickly re-enter into that. And that's something that I think, unfortunately, as adults, we got to relearn that. We've got to recapture the capacity, that resilience of little children to just enter into the freshness of what's new.
The capacity for play.
Yeah.
We don't do a lot of that anymore. I think as adults, particularly the entertainment culture we have, which is pretty much when you do something to kind of couch potato a bit or entertainment, it's all pretty passive. We're watching someone else play football or whatever, golf or whatever, instead of having that place of play in our own lives. I remember when I was in my young 20s, one of the things a group of us used to do together, a group of us that were fellowshipping together, a lot of Friday nights we'd go to my dad's farm. My dad had two of these three-wheeler ATV things, these Honda
three-wheelers. Ooh, fun.
And we'd go play a version of Capture. He also had a eucalyptus grove and some outbuildings, farming kind of stuff. And we'd go out with two people on the ATVs and then 8-10 people on the ground. And the 8-10 people on the ground had to get all the way up the hill through the trees and get...
Without being run over?
caught in the headlights. And there were 5 Frisbees at the top of the hill. And if the group could get those 5 Frisbees down to the bottom of the hill before the bikers caught 3 people with Frisbees, then they'd win. And I remember going out there, we'd go out there every Friday noontime, my phone would start ringing, people saying, are you going up to your folks' place tonight? kids wanting to go, adults wanting to go. I remember one night, this is 11:30 at night. We're still playing this game. It's a driving rainstorm. And I'm standing in this tree. This bike's going by, and I've tucked into this tree so they can't see me. And I hear this commotion next to me. I look over. My dad, who was 55 at the time, about the age I am now, was crawling on his belly through the weeds like his World War II days in this driving rainstorm trying to get himself a Frisbee. And I'm looking at him going, are you ever going to grow up? I didn't know. What I know now about being 55 is my best stuff is play. I mean, I enjoy things I do work-wise. I don't unenjoy that. But, boy, get me in a situation like that today, volleyball, playing. If I could play that game today, I look at my dad thinking, how many guys would do this at 55? Now I know. I think all of us would if we had the chance. That's just picking fun stuff. But for some reason, this whole idea of getting old and being an adult, and, you know, we get this idea that you're responsible now, and you don't have time for play, and play's bad, instead of play's good.
Oh, play is fantastic.
It is fantastic.
There was a brother that I think is just he's part of the whole, you know, listening to the God Journey thing. But he on his own time creates pictures.
Yeah.
And occasionally he sends me one that is a verse. And he pulled one out of 1 Samuel 16, verse 17, where it's, you know, it's calling, I think it's Saul, calling for someone who can play skillfully. And I know that it's about some kind of musician thing in the picture.
Playing music. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you don't have what he has as a picture. He's got this little girl with a little ponytail out and these little bubbles. And she is just fun, gorgeous, happy-go-lucky. And I sat there and I went, you know what? That was such a wonderful little twist.
And the scripture is what?
That bring someone to me who can play skillfully or skilled.
At play.
And I sat there and I just went, you know, that is so brilliant because it sent me on my own little thread. And I just went, you know what? That is one of the touchstones for learning to have a relationship, a genuine friendship with God. I find in those moments of play with my kids, I do feel more close to God at those moments than I do when I'm trying to be spiritual.
Yeah.
I mean, it just in those present tense moments, there's a joyfulness, and I think that's the heart when Jesus was, you know, correcting the disciples, you know, when they're saying, oh, you know, let's be done with these. I think he was trying to say, no, let's bring this front and center. Please don't lose sight of the beauty of what this is. This is relationship.
Absolutely.
This is friendship. This is play.
And as I was reading that note from the folks in New Zealand, you know, chasing this camper and then deciding not to, and the camper pulls away, and you hear, if you're in a car with people like that, that'd be a hoot.
Yeah.
We're talking about, this is fun.
Yeah, this is an adventure.
And the lunchtime was not, you know, some religious outreach to people. It doesn't have any of those overtones, which is what, I think when we grew up and got responsible, we felt like somehow the serious stuff had greater value than the joy of play and what God does in the childlikeness of hearts that are just still discovering, still growing, still enjoying Him. I think that's a fabulous way to look at this journey, particularly some of the discussion we've had of late about intimacy and, you know, how real is this intimacy and, you know, how do I get started if I'm lost in it? I think this plays into that. I think, you know, chucking some of what you think you know and just saying, God, show me. I really want to learn. And if you're angry, have it out with them. You know, I take what we started this podcast with. Go ahead. Tell them. Tell them where you're struggling. Tell them where you're hurting.
Yeah.
Tell them what you want to see. Tell them how much you want to know Him and watch what He unfolds in you.
You know, I wonder, and I think I have my answer to this, but I don't think the Scripture speaks directly to it. I don't think I would see if the kid's bawling and squalling, I'm not really sure Jesus would be sitting there going like, shh, shh, shh. And it's like you think of the entire church environment that we've always grown up with. What is a parent's biggest nightmare? With their kids is bawling and squalling. We got to take them out. As opposed to stopping and trying to...
dropping lifesavers onto the hardwood floor and letting it roll all the way. All the way. That always used to mortify my parents. They'd look at me going, I lost control of my lifesaver. And now the whole kingdom of God is ruined.
Well, you got to sit there. It's like, what do kids think when all things religious are shh, shh? It's kind of like, what is God's problem?
And if you laugh.
Oh, that's that.
If something gets funny and you laugh, you get that look from your parents like, you will die when you get out here.
I was on the front row of a pew when we were growing up in our church, and I remember our senior pastor. He was a cool guy. I mean, I liked him. He was like one of my little heroes, and I really enjoyed him. And I forget the joke. I mean, I could come up with a bunch of them, but I forget the particular joke. But somehow, something he said was so absolutely funny. And it was in the early part of his sermon. I lost it, and I never got it back together again. And I'm there on the front row, and I'm trying so bad to keep it together. And I am just busting loose laughter. And you're just going like, I realize, oh, my gosh, I'm going to be in so much trouble. And you know what? He never did anything to try to pipe me down. And as you mention this, I'm just going like, you know what? I don't know, maybe he didn't think he could do anything, but the beauty of, you know what, there's something totally fine about that.
Because there's something about, it's not just the meetings, is it? It's actually when we get out, it's in life in general. It's like, you're having too much fun, you got to knock it off, you can't, life's not about play. Yeah. I mean, all the language we use for each other is how we lose our childlikeness, and that's why maybe Jesus kept saying, okay, listen, we're going to get back to the kingdom stuff. The kingdom stuff's more in the childlike playfulness than it is in the adult,
serious,
expert, philosophical, deep dialogues trying to figure out everything that's, I think that's...
Or we've got to be, Jesus wasn't holding a bunch of kingdom rallies all the time, where he's got to, we got to go take the kingdom.
Or telling people, look, we're going to meet tomorrow, and you got to be committed to be there. and you got to be quiet, and you can't bring kids in because they'll make noise, and if the kids are there, you've got to keep an eye on them, because if they make noise, they're going to ruin everything God's doing. I mean, that whole environment we put to religion, which is creating this sacred space that is free from any kind of playful intrusion, is just about as false as it can be.
Yeah, and there's so much life instruction. I mean, it's like a phrase I might toss out is the lost art of being playful.
Yeah.
It's like there's so much life instruction that if you try to sit kids down and go read the Bible to them and you're going to kind of preach at them, I'm not thinking most kids are sitting there, unless you're a phenomenal storyteller and you're doing all the sounds, bells, and whistles, and actions.
But that's the children's sermon now. We do that, and then we get them out of there so we can get to the deep stuff.
But I mean, that is so boring and so dry, so stale, and yet you sort of feel like you take those kids out back and you just start playing a game with them and you let life come at your front and center and then you just respond to it. there's going to be so much more learning and so much more loving, and it's all going to come so much more naturally if you allow that to be the development of spiritual life.
Yeah, I like to say kids are the canaries in the mine shaft of the body of Christ. You know,
Say that again.
Kids are the canaries in the mine shaft of the body of Christ. You used to take these canaries into the mines before they had testing equipment. So if the gases started building up in the mine, the canaries would die first, and then the humans could get out. And I don't mean that about. I just mean that about boredom. You know, I think if kids are bored. And well, you're right. I think for, you know, making kids go to a Sunday morning event past the age of 13 or 14, really the whole task is, and probably younger, how do we get these kids to sit here and
be still,
not act as bored as the rest of us feel? I mean, I think that's kind of where it goes for the most part. If we can just get them not to act bored. And so the whole prim posture you learn is, this is not about fun. This is about serious stuff with God. And yet, like what you just said about the playfulness, I remember a guy who took our kids out one time from this fellowship thing we had. He got, it's summertime, big waste can full of water balloons. And he built these little slings for the kids. And he got up on this 10-foot ladder. He was Goliath, and he had all these water balloons and slings. And said, hey, go ahead and hit me. And the kids were trying, he was acting out how difficult it was for David to actually hit what he was trying to aim for with the sling. The kids, he never got hit once. And the kids just slaughtered each other with water balloons hurling everywhere. That was 20 years ago. I still hear about that from people. My kids.
Oh, sure.
Because that's so memorable. It's just play, and it's just, how much is that? I can't imagine anything, even the movie you got coming up on Goliath, that would necessarily be as powerful as that.
So I don't know. That has been something the Lord, I feel, has been kind of whispering and bringing back into just full view of just enjoying the playfulness of life, finding God in the midst of that.
And it's a good reminder, I think, in our relationships to keep that in mind, even as the forums had some stresses with people who are coming on to try and change things, and then other people who are just saying, oh, slow it down. And then some of the questions were, how do we police this forum from bullies that come in? And, boy, once we become police, the play's over for everybody.
Oh, yeah,
even if the folks who really get it have to become police people to protect the innocent, something really goes off the rails there every time. I read this in Reader's Digest last month. I thought this was hilarious. And it's a story about his grandparents. It says, the cries from upstairs told my friend that her identical twin granddaughters, Liz and Beth, were arguing. What's wrong? She asked. Between sobs, Liz told her, Beth said I was ugly. When I read that, if that doesn't express so well what the body of Christ looks like when we're picking at each other and arguing.
Twins, saying, you're ugly.
Identical twin, and this one's all upset. Hilarious. I remember my cousin coming down one time. We're at my parents' house, and my cousins were there, and one of them just hears this blood-curdling scream from the bedroom. She had about 2-3 years old. She comes running out, and she's in tears. You know, everybody's looking for blood or, you know, fingers pinched in a door or something, because it was that kind of a scream. What's the matter? What's the matter, honey? And she looked up, and she said, Rachel, which is her older sister, Rachel found a magic wand, and she changed me into a pig. And she's totally traumatized by the event. And we're
looking
at
her. She's a pig now.
Yeah. She's a pig. And so we're kind of like, okay, look, honey, there's no hoofs. There's no snout. You're really not a pig. And your sister really didn't. But I think if fellowship remains playful, we've got a shot of getting through this.
Oh,
together.
It's so life-filled.
And if fellowship becomes, I've got to fix you, convince you.
I like
what you said. Even in crisis, even where I hurt the most, it is that playful relationship with others that's going to help me get. It's not the denial of the crisis.
No.
But it's recapturing that sense of wonder and not expert and having to respond to what Jesus is doing right now that makes this live so powerfully.
Yeah, you know, living that out in front of our kids when in those moments, it's only possible if your life is kind of anchored in the fact that it's not up to me. If I am a little kid, then I do have a father. And if there's someone who carries the ultimate responsibility, it's not the little kid. I can't do that. And, you know, I do think that it's like, God has been restoring in my understanding what it is to be cared for, loved. I mean,
Abba.
Yeah,
the Abba that we all have.
Yeah. So go find a little kid and enter their world.
And how about you and I go play Capture the Flag?
There we go.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com,